My name is Jamie Johnson. I'm 26 years old. Today is December 20th, 2008. We're here in Tampa, Florida, and I'm here with my grandmother.
My name is Edith Eileen Johnson. I'm 80 years old. Today's date is December the 20th, 2008. We're in Tampa, and I have my granddaughter here to talk to.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to start. I asked my brother, Brent, what I should ask you. And the first thing that he said is I'm supposed to ask you is, who is your favorite grandchild and why?
Oh, that is really a stinky thing to say, isn't it? Well, both of you are. I have no favorites. You're the only two I have, and I love you dearly, and both of you are equal. And put that in your pipe. But they're just darling, and they grew up so far away from me, but I did make lots of trips out to, they were in Los Alamos, New Mexico, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd take the train out and see them, but they were just adorable children, and full of the old Nick, and so smart. But then, well, Jamie is a third year medical student at Gainesville, so we're going to have a doctor in the family. And Brent is looking into graduate school to get his MBA. So it's been, and they're world travelers. That's what I'm envious about. Because when I was a girl, we had a war, and nobody got to travel unless you were in the service, which I wasn't in that then. But now they go everywhere. When I think about all the trips you've made, I wrote them all down. I have a list of the places you've been. And some of them are what? Where have you been?
So, Brent and I, we both lived in Japan for 2 years, and then from there we went to all throughout Asia, and we spent Christmas, I think, a couple years ago in Australia, so that was wonderful for us.
And you went to China,
mm-hmm.
Korea,
mm-hmm.
Thailand,
mm-hmm.
Where else?
Exactly.
You went to India once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met Michelle there, my stepmom there, so yeah, it was great. So I was going to ask you, too, where would you like to go?
Everywhere. No, we enjoyed our trip when we celebrated our 49th anniversary, and we went to Scotland, and we went to England, and then we went over to France when your father remarried, and that was a wonderful trip. I really enjoyed that. But and I love France. I would go back to France tomorrow. I thought the area around Nice and the Maritime Alps, I thought it was gorgeous. But we were there in June, too, and the flowers, everything was so beautiful. And I'd go back, except that I don't think I could hack it now. I'm too old. And that's a long flight, really long flight for us. We're content to be in the slow lane in Florida.
What was it like to see your son get married?
I loved it. I was hoping he would marry Michelle because she is a darling woman. And her whole family was so hospitable to us. I mean, it was a beautiful, we didn't all speak the same language, but we certainly communicated. And I thought it was a darling wedding. It was all in French, but I noticed that our son Mark knew when to say "we," so that the marriage was legal. I loved it. It was beautiful.
What was your wedding like?
It was very, very small. We had a private wedding. I was still in the Air Force. My husband was out of Air Force and in school in Chicago. So we got married the 24th of June, which is the Swedish Midsummer Festival, which I didn't know at the time. We just had a private wedding, and then my mother had a little reception at the house. And then I had to go back. We went back to Chicago. Well, the Korean War started the day after we were married, which was lovely. So when I went back to the base in July, they said, Edith, if you want to get out, you better walk your discharge off because they're going to freeze everybody for another year. Well, I wasn't about to be frozen there and have my husband in Chicago. So I did. And I got out the 15th of July. And I was very happy to be out. And I didn't want to be in that mess. I did not want to go to Korea, which I don't think they would have sent me. I was a photographer. And I loved it. Until I met my husband, I thought I'd make a career, but he fouled up everything by us falling in love with each other. And we've been married, 58 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
And how did you first meet?
Oh, dear. I don't know whether I want to tell you that or not. We were in the photo lab, and we were having a Christmas party, and the fellows were in the supply room shooting craps. And I walked in, and he had all this money between his fingers. And I was there about 15 minutes, and he lost it all. That should have told him something. And then he asked me out, and we went out. And that was our first date.
And that night?
Yeah, and we were married following June.
What did you do for your date, though, that night?
Oh, there was nothing to do. We were in Rantoul, Illinois, which was just not, I think there were three taverns and one restaurant. What could you do? You go to the local saloon, you know, and that was it. And then walked home, and it was cold. I can remember that, but I didn't think much of him at the time. But he grew on me. He was a very persistent man. And I'm very happy. We had had a good life, and we had two wonderful children and now two beautiful grandchildren. And they're everything we ever hoped for.
And so you met, and then you were married the following June. But then over that time, right, you lived in various places over the course of your marriage. I mean,
oh yeah, we lived in Chicago, and we had both children there, and then we went back to Davenport, Iowa, which is really what I consider my home. And then we lived there until 1997 when we moved to Florida. And I really hated leaving, but my husband has this lung problem. You know Grandpa does. He coughs all the time. And he's so good down here. Plus, we have the VA hospital here. That's a marvelous facility, and we're grateful to them. In fact, my new glasses, I had my cataract surgery done there. So anyway, and it's nice to be close to you. Mm-hmm. And to Mark in Orlando or Maitland or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So we're going there for Christmas.
Right. What? And so how did you choose Davenport?
Well, let's see. My grandparents lived there. And that's why we went back, my mother and I went to school. I went to my last 2 years. I went to a Catholic girls' school, which I loved because we wore uniforms. There was no deciding what to wear every day. And then from there, and then I went in the service.
How did you choose to go into the service?
Well, I had a scholarship for college, but we were not rich people, and there was no way I could go, even though I had a nice little scholarship. But so I decided, well, I was adventurous. I wanted to see the world. So I went to the Navy recruiter, and he was an old salt, and I wasn't thrilled with him, and he wasn't thrilled with me. He did not like the idea of women in the service. So I went next door to the Army and enlisted, and then we took tests, and you got, depending on your score, you got in the Air Force, and I was delighted to get in the Air Force. However, why did I pick photography? I often wonder. I guess it's because it was the hardest thing to get into. I decided I'd try it, and I was in Denver for 9 or 10 months, and I loved Denver, and I loved the school. I mean, I really enjoyed my service, and then from there, I went to Rantoul, and then I met Sid, and it was over. So what about you? This is not all about me.
You're the storyteller here
yes,
today.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Yes, I am.
And how about your childhood? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, it was not a happy childhood. My parents were divorced when I was 8, and my mother and I were very close. We were close all our lives. We lived together all except 12 and a half years of our lives. Hmm. And, well, you know your great-grandmother. You loved her dearly. But I changed schools 17 times and attended 9 different schools. So it was really hectic until my last 2 years. And I loved my last 2 years of high school. And I've been back for a couple of reunions, but now there's not too many left. I mean, I'm outgrowing all my friends, you know. I mean, I'm getting old, and they're dropping like flies anymore. Mm. But when you get to be 80,
right,
what can you expect? Although I don't think I act like I'm 80.
I don't think so either. Yeah. So what kind of a kid were you?
Very docile, very good. I mean, my mother had no problems with me until I decided I wasn't going back to high school. That was a problem. That's why she put me in this other school. But no, I mean, I love school. I really love school. But I didn't like moving back and forth. I couldn't make any good friends, you know. Mm-hmm. You just don't. So, and I never liked Gary, where we lived off and on. And my childhood was not the best, but I had a mother who was there for me all the time. I always knew I could count on her. Mm-hmm. And I still miss her, even though she's been gone since 96. Mm-hmm. I do talk about her a lot, don't I, Jamie?
You do. What are some of your favorite memories with her?
No, let's see. It's hard to say. So many happy things happened with us. I was so thrilled when she married my stepfather. I really pushed for that. And I named our daughter Paula for him. His name was Paul. And, well, there's just so many. I mean, it would take 50 minutes to tell you all the beautiful things about her. But she was always there for me. She didn't think I could do anything wrong, which is very nice, you know. And she stuck with me. She could have put me in a home when she was divorced from my father, but she wouldn't do that. She kept me with her, and she was a little, little girl. So anyway, it was her name was Doris Everett Kiernan, and she was born in Galesburg, Illinois in 1908, so she would have been 100 this year.
Oh, that's true.
It's hard to
that's
believe.
True. Yeah. On June 29th.
Yes, right, June 29th. And your father's birthday is the 27th. He was almost a present for her.
Oh, that's true, because he was quite early, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was an eighth-month baby. We nearly lost him. We had him in the hospital in Chicago for 3 months. Mm. He was allergic to cow's milk. So, but we saved him, and now I wish that one doctor who told me I wouldn't raise him, I wish he were around. He's probably dead, too, because I was furious with him. And I have to look at him now. He has his doctorate, and he's a very successful man. Mm-hmm. So he told me he was a puny little child, and he probably wouldn't live very long. Oh, when I think about it, I could strangle him. Okay, where are we now?
Right. Here. And so then with great-grandma, right?
Yes.
Right. Now that you're a grandmother, mm-hmm. what kind of grandmother was she? Like, can you see?
Oh, she was a wonderful grandmother. She was a little partial to Paula because she had her for about 5 months. Because when we were in Chicago, Sid's VA bill ran out, his GI Bill. So I had to go to work. Well, what are you going to do? You know, there's no, they didn't have places to take your kids in those days. So my mother took her back to Davenport. We're in Chicago. I was a wreck. I would never have do that again. Oh, it was horrible. And so my mother was naturally, she raised, you know, those 5 months. And Paula was very ill when she got back, when I took her back, because she missed my mother. But we got over that. And, of course, I got pregnant for Mark right away. There were 14 and a half months between those two. And I was working at an insurance company, and they wouldn't, in those days, if you got pregnant, you were out the door. You know, which is ridiculous, but that's the way it was. Or sometimes at the phone company, you couldn't be married before the war. But after that, when the war started, well, they had no choice. So I worked at the phone company during the war. In fact, I was on the board VJ night, and I got it. We all got a plaque for doing that. That was something. The switchboard lit up like Christmas. I've never seen anything like it. Because was VJ, the silly, horrible, ghastly war was over. It was wonderful. Oh, that was a high moment in my life.
Where did you first get your sense of patriotism?
I don't know. I think I've always had it. Mm-hmm. I love, I'm still, I have to cough, okay? Excuse me. I just loved the flag, and I don't know, I just something about it, and when I went in the service, that really cemented it. Mm. And now I am registered at the Women's Memorial in Washington, and which is really nice. I try to support that. And I belong to the WAF Association, which is the Women in the Air Force. And I keep in touch with some of my friends from the service. Mm-hmm. But as I say, you know, they're all in such poor health. And I'm not, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. I had a real good physical, and they told me I was like a 65-year-old woman. Thank you very much.
You told me a little bit about Arlene, one of your good friends from the service,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. She was my maid of honor in the service. And she married a young man, and he went to Korea a week after she was married. So she stayed in then until he came home. But she was a lovely girl. She still is a lovely girl. She lives in Yuma, Arizona now, and we keep in touch. Mm-hmm. It's nice with the telephone, you know. I don't do email. I am really not up to all this good stuff that you people do.
Right. But it seems like you've always been one to have lots of friends and keep in touch with a lot of people, right? You had a great social network when you were in Davenport,
oh,
I remember.
Yes. Well, I belonged to One Bridge Club for 43 years, and now there's only three left in that original club. So, and I talked to all of them. I've been doing, instead of Christmas cards, I do phone calls. Mm. But one of the highlights of my life is when I worked at the college, when Paula went to school and to Iowa, and I went to work at Marycrest. That, I mean, I love, those were my 50s, 40s and 50s. I love the work, and I love the nuns, and we had a wonderful rapport. I still keep in touch with all of them. Mm-hmm. And it's it was an experience I'll never forget.
And so you worked as a registrar, right, at Marycrest?
Yeah, I started out as a record clerk, and in 2 years I was registrar. Because I did not have a college education, but when they checked with the North Central certifying people, they said, listen, if she can do the job, don't worry about it. So I got that job, and that was nice because I had two in college, and Sid and I really had to scramble to keep, you know, even though Iowa was not the most expensive school, it's an excellent school, and I loved Iowa City. I really liked to go up there. And Paula got her MBA there, and Mark got his PhD there. So we have nice memories of Iowa City.
So what would you do when you would go visit them? What would you do in Iowa City when you would go visit them?
We usually take them out to dinner because they were always hungry. Mm-hmm. And there was Mark was such a crazy one. He didn't that with a computer. You know, Johnson is such a common name. So he changed his name to UConn when he ran his cards. In those days, you had the IBM cards. But he would do this at night. So he'd be up all night and sleep all day and then go to class in between. And he would be such a slob. We really worried about him because he just didn't care. He wore tennis shorts and a thing over his head and let his hair grow. And his sister would walk down the street, and if she saw him coming, she'd cross the street so she didn't have to sit. Speak to him. She was so embarrassed by him. But now that I think about it, I think it's hilarious. He didn't care. Oh, of course, now he cares, but he didn't then. He was all to get through school. That's what he wanted. Well, he started in 70, got his doctorate in 76. You can't really say that he wasn't hustling right along.
Mm-hmm. And I heard him once say that he was trying to beat Aunt Paula, like get finished before she did, really.
Oh, yeah, they're very competitive. He was within 2 hours of getting his degree, but she beat him. And he was really furious. He wanted to beat her. But it worked out anyway. He got his doctorate, and that was what he was after. Mm. And we started talking college when those children were just little. And Mark said he was going to go to Iowa City and throw the bull. Well, I don't think he did that, but I thought it was hilarious when he'd say that. It was so cute.
What were they like as kids?
Oh, they were something. I was with them almost always alone because Sid traveled, and I would be home with the children. And they were very good, and we ate what we wanted to eat when he was gone. And we would, I would read to them at the table. And it's funny because I did all these things, and now when I say something, oh, I remember how Daddy used to play games with us. They don't remember me sitting there by the hour reading and taking them everywhere, but they remember Daddy because that was the high spot of the week when he would come home. And he always walked in and they'd say, what did you bring me? And he usually had some little trinket for them, but he traveled so much, and that was hard on him, really hard. But he, in those days, you know, we didn't have big vacations and things like that. When he took a vacation, he'd get another job for 2 weeks because money was tight. We bought our first house. I was worried to death that we wouldn't be able to make the payments, but we did. We struggled. Nobody handed us anything. We worked for everything, and I think that's good. And we didn't have any credit. We had no credit cards. We had nothing like that, and that was all right. I had a checking account, but that it was different. It was different than today, and not that it was better. I think change is important. You can't be stagnant. I think that's, and as far as sitting here looking back at things and saying the good old days, baloney, I like my life now. I have a dishwasher and a washer and a dryer, and I have a few things that I didn't have then. So, and I love the idea of young people. That's what I like. I'm living in a park with all these people over 55, and they're very nice, very nice. But some of them are boring. They are really boring. I can't help but say it. And but it's still a good life. We're very grateful.
Wonderful, wonderful. So it's nearly Christmas, and I remembered you telling me about how the gifts and the code that you had.
When my kids, Mark was the worst one. He'd shake things, And just, you know, if something could be breakable, and I used to just get furious, so I devised a code. And I've never let them know what it is. And Mark said to me not too long ago, when you were, you know, not pretty young, Mom, are you going to tell me about the code? I said, no, I'm taking it to my grave.
But the code for the gifts?
Uh-huh.
That you would, what would you do, though, with the code?
What would I do with it?
Right. So you would write something on the tag,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, uh-huh. And it was all numbers and letters, and they never cracked it, never. And that's because I'm devious, and I changed things. But, you know, that was crazy because they were just, you know, count how many. Do you have this many gifts or I have this many gifts? You know, that was important. Everything was even, Stephen. So I put all these numbers on and nobody knew what anything. I had to give out the gifts. And I did, and I'm keeping that secret.
And so you still know the code now, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm not telling it. That's a secret.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Got it. Do you have any other secrets?
Well, if I do, you think I'm going to tell you? No, I have. Everybody has secrets, Jamie. Mm. And a couple always has lovely secrets, you know, that nobody else is ever going to know. And I just dread the day when something happens to one of us. But I'm not thinking about that. I think positive. We're going to go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want.
Right.
As long as Grandpa can play golf twice a week and play poker once a week and win.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do my thing. I love to read and talk to people and write letters.
Mm-hmm. And play cards,
and
right?
Well, I don't get to play cards, you know, only when you're there and when we're at Mark's. But I would really like a bridge game this Christmas. I wish it could be arranged.
How did you learn bridge in the first place?
I belong to a 500 club, and unbeknownst to me, some of the women were bored with 500, and so they started learning bridge. And all of a sudden, we went to club one night, and they said, we're playing bridge. I had no idea what to do. So I got a book and read it, and then I started playing. And then I taught Paul and Mark to play bridge because we were out in the country. And on the weekends, you know, people wouldn't come out if the weather was bad. So they learned how to play bridge. And that was really nice. Then we could play. And, but of course, Mark didn't believe me. He went to the library and got books. So he read the books, and he had his own strategy. And but that's how he was.
Yeah.
But you are a good bridge player, Jamie.
Mm-hmm. But we always play pinochle.
Well, yeah, but that cutthroat. That's a good game. That's
mm-hmm.
a good game.
How did you learn that one?
I don't know. I think I was born knowing it. We played cards as a child. Everybody played cards. We didn't have television, you know, so we entertained ourselves.
You would play with great grandma too?
Hmm?
Would you play with your mom?
Oh, sure, yeah. She always had to work to raise me. I mean, she didn't have much time. But I was thinking about something when we were driving down here. My grandfather was born in a dugout in Kansas. And there were seven children. And two of them died on the trip out. They were going to Oklahoma. Anyway, they buried these two babies, and then they drove the wagons over the top of the graves so that animals wouldn't desecrate the graves. And when my grandfather died, I went to the cemetery, first time I've been to the old cemetery, and there were no markers. There was nothing on any of the graves, and I was upset because I thought, you know, we should have their names of my grandmother and now my grandfather and uncles and aunts. And then I was told the story that because of what happened on the prairie, that there was no way anyone was ever going to have a marker because those two little babies were buried with nothing and no one would ever know where they were. So there is nothing on the grave that tells that it's our family. And I guess that's okay if that's what they wanted. But I thought that was a kind of a sad story.
Mm.
That must have been a hard life then. But they must have been brave people to do that. They turned around in Oklahoma and went back to Illinois. It was just too hard. But he only had a fourth grade education, my grandfather.
Mm.
But he was quite the man. Quite the man. They had six children, and he was a good father.
So this is on great grandma's side, on your mother's side.
Yeah, right.
So they had six children.
They had six children. Yeah, three girls, three boys.
And where was great grandma in that?
She was number. She was, let's see, one, two. She was, I think, the third child.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a tomboy, And my grandmother used to say when she'd look for Doris, she'd look out the window and look in the tallest tree because that's probably where she'd be. She was really something else. And she was always and loved to dance. She was quite the dancer. In fact, that's where she met my father, at a dance. I think he swept her off her feet. And she still would do the Charleston just for fun when she was in her 40s, just for fun.
Just in the house? Sorry.
Yeah, just to show the... Well, we love to dance. I love to dance until I marry my husband. He, the only time he can dance is if he's had a couple drinks, and then he's not that good.
What kind of dancing would you like to do?
Everything. Everything. I love to polka. I love to shoddy. Do the Lindy. I love to waltz, foxtrot, anything. Just turn the music on and turn me loose. But now I can hardly walk across the street, so I'd have a little problem, wouldn't I? Oh, dear. Well.
Yeah, I didn't know that you were a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that you liked to dance.
Oh, I love to dance. Yeah. Do you like to dance?
A little bit. I feel like if I learned, that would help.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember. I just remember doing it. Well, my mother gave me tap lessons, dancing lessons, and I like to tap. But as far as ballroom or anything like that, no. I just the guy took a hold of you, and out you went on the floor, and he'd lead, and you'd follow, and that was fun. This dancing, some people do not. I'm surprised they don't put their backs out of whack. It is incredible to me, all that energy. I think it's marvelous.
Mm-hmm. And so do you see yourself becoming more like your mother?
Oh, I am like my mother.
How so?
Oh, I talk like her. I'm starting to look a little more like her, although I look more like my grandmother. I have dark circles around my eyes. My mother was just a wonderful person. She had such a tough life, and those last 29 years we had her with us, you know. She was just a darling. There's just no other. Oh, she had a temper. She had a temper. And she let you know, too. She didn't stand for any foolishness, and that was good. But I always knew, no matter what happened, she loved me dearly, and I could do no wrong. Unless she wanted to correct me, that was different. But somebody else, forget it. She was there for me. And that's something everyone should have. I think that's what's wrong today. These kids don't have someone that just thinks that they're wonderful and stands by them. Now, she would correct me. I mean, she always just say, you are as good as anyone, but no one is better than you are. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to remember. And if somebody was rude to me, she'd say, just ignore them. Well, it's kind of hard to do when you're a kid. But it worked out. It worked out. We went through it all, and it was, I've had a good life. I don't figure it's over either.
Right? Yeah, that's true. And so you spent a fair amount of time in Wisconsin, too.
Oh, that's where we went on vacation. Some people went to the Grand Canyon. We went to the Northwoods to see Sid's family, and they were wonderful. Sid's father was a real tall Swedish man, and Sid told me the first time I met him, he said, now, if my dad doesn't talk to you, don't be surprised. We got off the train, he never stopped talking. It was really funny, and they were very welcoming. They had never met me before we got married, and they were very nice to me, and Sid went deer hunting and left me with all the new relatives, which was really charming of him, and I got to go to meet all the relatives in Hayward, Wisconsin, which is where the family was originally. They came from Sweden and settled there. And his Auntie Lillian, who was 6'2", and giggled. She had a real funny little giggle and was very nice to me. Well, they all were. And I felt so funny. I mean, here I was pregnant, meeting these people for the first time. It was an experience. And Sid had a wonderful time deer hunting, and I got to meet all the relatives. And they were wonderful. And my mother-in-law was just the kindest, sweetest person. And we got along. She was not a mother-in-law who interfered. She wouldn't give you advice unless you asked for it. But we went there every year after the children were about 3. Then we took them up, and they were baptized there at the house. We had the pastor come over, a Lutheran pastor. And I raised my children Lutheran. And I think now, I don't know what they do, but then I don't question. It's none of my affair. And what religion are you, my darling?
Yeah. So from my mom's side too, Buddhist, right?
Right.
So, and you met, and you spent a lot of time with with my other set of grandparents.
Oh, your grandparents, the Haritas? Mm-hmm. Oh, they were darling people, Daisy and Howard. They were just so charming and made me feel so welcome. We were out at Mark's and Michelle and Merle's at I promised you to come. I'd come for your fourth birthday. So then I did, and I got to meet them, and they were just, well, it was a wonderful visit, and I've always cherished that. And then we corresponded after that. And then, of course, your grandmother had breast cancer and died of that. And then I've met two of your aunts. Mm-hmm. And I think you have a great family on the other side of the family. The Haritas are really lovely people. Mm-hmm. And you're blessed, Jamie, with the good relatives. Mm-hmm. You really are.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, some families aren't lucky like we are. Mm.
And so I've always wanted to ask you this, too. How did you find out you would become a grandmother?
Well, your father called up and told me.
Oh, and that's how he did it? That's how it was done?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember the first time I saw you. Your dad was on a sabbatical. You were born in Tucson. And he was going to the University of Minnesota for the last 6 months of his sabbatical. And your mother flew with you to Moline, Illinois, because we were in Davenport. And when she got off the plane, she hadn't had anything to eat, and she was afraid to take a pill for Dramamine because she always got air sick, because she was afraid with you holding on to a five-month-old kid. She got off the plane. She was as white as a sheet. She just tossed that kid at me. And you put your arms around my neck, and I think it's been that way ever since. You were always my darling little girl. You weren't one bit shy. And we gave Merle a quick candy bar and got her on her feet and took her home. She was really wiped out. That was a tough trip for her. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't well. She contacted hepatitis C when you were born from a transfusion. Mm-hmm. Well, thank God that's over. Mm-hmm. Now they check for that. They didn't in those days.
And how about for Brent, the first time you saw him?
Well, he was Caesarean, so they told me when, and then I came out.
You took the train.
I took the train out, yeah, and I was there. And your mother was all baby. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you weighed 12, 3.5, and he weighed 11, 7, so you weren't exactly little tiny babies. But I went up to the hospital the day after he was born, and your mother was really kind of sad. She said, oh, he looks so Oriental. I said, for heaven's sakes, Merle, he's half Oriental. He's half Japanese. But he was so darling. He was such a cute baby. And he was a good baby, a real good little baby. I was there 2 weeks after he was born. Mm-hmm. And then I went home. And they were fine. You were fine. Mm-hmm. But you were my tag-along. I couldn't get rid of you. You were glued to me.
And I cried and cried when you would leave.
Oh, yes, you cried all the way home. Your father said he could have just... He didn't know what to do with you. Because I want my grandma.
And then great-grandma's reaction to Brent and Brent's relationship with her.
So thrilled. She was so thrilled. Well, he looked like a little sumi wrestler the first time we saw him. He was 3 months old, you know. He weighed 25 pounds. When he was 3 months old, he was really a tub. And she held him, but she couldn't walk with him. And she just hung on to him so we could take pictures. Mm-hmm. But she couldn't stop looking at him because he had these gorgeous brown eyes. And he said when he was older, why does great-grandma stare at me? And I said, because you're so beautiful and your eyes really, she just admires your eyes. He wasn't too thrilled with that, but she couldn't take her eyes off him. Mm-hmm. But that's when we played, remember, we played cards with breakfast. I had you for those 6 weeks they moved to Atlanta. Oh, what a time we had. One of the hottest summers in the world. Mm-hmm. And we had breakfast, we played cards, fish and war. And I taught you how to say congratulations, even though you were little cheaters. And when the big old crocodile tears would roll down the cheeks and... Then you'd still say congratulations. That taught you to be good winners.
Mm-hmm. And do you say the same thing to Dad and Aunt Paula, too?
Oh, absolutely. Well, of course, they were so... They didn't play cards like that. They didn't really play like you and Brent did. It was different. It was different. We played... we colored and cut out things. And it was your childhood was so different than theirs. But that's the way, you know, things were.
Right. And so you spent a fair number of summers at Boot Lake.
Yes. 32 years we went up there for vacations. And last year was the first year we stayed in Florida all summer. It was lovely. I didn't mind it at all, but I did miss the lake and my friends up there. We had such a nice time. And Sid loved the fishing and his boat, which we're waiting to get rid of. But it's too difficult. It's 1,800-mile drive, and we just can't do it anymore. And even though we'd love to, it's just too difficult. And now it's too expensive.
Right. And the resort there, though, you would stay at the Birches, yes. And you would stay in the cottages, right?
Right. We used to go just for 2 weeks. But then the last, 10 years, we went for 4 months. And that was and stayed in the motel at the Birches. And we had a wonderful time. And the kids, I watched those children grow up there. The people, and then Shirley Godfrey, who owned the resort, was a dear, dear friend of mine. And her sons were such darlings. And I mean, it was just a lovely time to go. But everything comes to an end. You have to face that and not be sorry. Just be glad you had what you had.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying that when you would get back from the lake, too, sometimes when great-grandma wouldn't go and she would stay in, that she would cook all of the stuff.
We'd come home and she'd have fried chicken and potato salad and a cake. And she'd be so. The last few years, I had someone come and stay with her because I was afraid to leave her alone. And she liked that little diversion, because she was really housebound. The last 2 years we did not go anywhere because I would not leave her. And before that, I'd have someone stay with her. And that was fine. She was happy. She was glad to see some different faces because I'm sure she was bored with Sid and I. And we'd try to have people come in. And she loved when I had Bridge Club because all the girls would come and talk to her. And her life, the last, I would say, 7 years of her life was not the greatest in the world, the quality of life. And so then when she had her hemorrhage, she had a lower GI hemorrhage, massive hemorrhage. The doctors talked about, they'd find out what was going on and do surgery. And I said, oh, no, you're not doing any surgery. I promised her no surgery. She's 88 years old. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that to her, so...
And now you talk to her, though. You still talk about her, talk to her, feel her around.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was with her. I was with my stepfather when he died, and I was with my mother, and so was Sid. I have no fear of death. It's a beautiful thing. It's part of living. And it was just so, and everyone looks about 10 years younger after they die. They just have the worry of the world is gone, and the body is so peaceful. It's a beautiful thing. It's heartbreaking. Because who wants to lose someone you love? But at the same time, you wouldn't wish them back in the condition that they're in. And I have all that taken care of, let me tell you. I don't want anyone bringing me back if I'm in that kind of shape. And that's important to do, too. Even when you're young, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the medical profession, you should see all this.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Have you had patients die?
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
No. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I feel vindicated. Because I say that and people look at me and they think, oh, how can that be?
That's true.
It's very, very, well, I'm hoping to live long enough that you can be my doctor. Not my surgeon, but my doctor.
Yeah.
And that won't be long.
No, not long at all. Not long at all.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to thank you for agreeing to do this with me. I've really enjoyed it. I think we have a special relationship and an extraordinary one, so I wanted to share this interview with you, this time with you.
Aren't you something? I really love you, and I think this was a great experience, and thank you for getting me into this with your Machiavellian traits.
I know, yes. And so I just wanted to end with what you always tell me anyway. How you say, nobody loves you like I do.
Nobody loves you like I do, Jamie.
My name is Jamie Johnson. I'm 26 years old. Today is December 20th, 2008. We're here in Tampa, Florida, and I'm here with my grandmother.
My name is Edith Eileen Johnson. I'm 80 years old. Today's date is December the 20th, 2008. We're in Tampa, and I have my granddaughter here to talk to.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to start. I asked my brother, Brent, what I should ask you. And the first thing that he said is that I'm supposed to ask you is, who is your favorite grandchild and why?
Oh, that is really a stinky thing to say, isn't it? Well, both of you are. I have no favorites. You're the only two I have, and I love you dearly, and both of you are equal. And put that in your pipe. But they are. They're just darling. And they grew up so far away from me, but I did make lots of trips out to. They were in Los Alamos, New Mexico, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd take the train out and see them. But they were just adorable children and full of the old Nick and so smart. But then, well, Jamie is a third-year medical student at Gainesville, so we're going to have a doctor in the family. And Brent is looking into graduate school to get his MBA. So it's been, and they're world travelers. That's what I'm envious about. Because when I was a girl, we had a war, and nobody got to travel unless you were in the service, which I wasn't in that then. But now they go everywhere. When I think about all the trips you've made, I wrote them all down. I have a list of the places you've been. And some of them are what? Where have you been?
So Brent and I, we both lived in Japan for 2 years. And then from there, we went to all throughout Asia. And we spent Christmas, I think, a couple years ago in Australia. So that was wonderful for us.
And you went to China,
mm-hmm.
Korea,
mm-hmm.
Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
Where else?
Exactly.
You went to India once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met Michelle there, my stepmom there. So, yeah, it was great. So I was going to ask you, too, where would you like to go?
Everywhere. No, we enjoyed our trip when we celebrated our 49th anniversary, and we went to Scotland, and we went to England, and then we went over to France when your father remarried, and that was a wonderful trip. I really enjoyed that. And I love France. I would go back to France tomorrow. I thought the area around Nice and the Maritime Alps, I thought it was gorgeous. But we were there in June, too, and the flowers, everything was so beautiful. And I'd go back, except that I don't think I could hack it now. I'm too old. And that's a long flight, really long flight for us. We're content to be in the slow lane in Florida.
What was it like to see your son get married?
I loved it. I was hoping he would marry Michelle because she is a darling woman. And her whole family was so hospitable to us. I mean, it was a beautiful. We didn't all speak the same language, but we certainly communicated. And I thought it was a darling wedding. It was all in French, but I noticed that our son Mark knew when to say "we," so that the marriage was legal. I loved it. It was beautiful.
What was your wedding like?
It was very, very small. We had a private wedding. I was still in the Air Force. My husband was out of Air Force and in school in Chicago. So we got married the 24th of June, which is the Swedish Midsummer Festival, which I didn't know at the time. We just had a private wedding, and then my mother had a little reception at the house. And then I had to go back. We went back to Chicago. Well, the Korean War started the day after we were married, which was lovely. So when I went back to the base in July, they said, Edith, if you want to get out, you better walk your discharge off because they're going to freeze everybody for another year. Well, I wasn't about to be frozen there and have my husband in Chicago. So I did, and I got out the 15th of July. And I was very happy to be out, and I didn't want to be in that mess. I did not want to go to Korea, which I don't think they would have sent me. I was a photographer, and I loved it. Until I met my husband, I thought I'd make a career, but he fouled up everything by us falling in love with each other. And we've been married, 58 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
And how did you first meet?
Oh, dear. I don't know whether I want to tell you that or not. We were in the photo lab, and we were having a Christmas party, and the fellows were in the supply room shooting crepes. And I walked in, and he had all this money between his fingers. And I was there about 15 minutes, and he lost it all. That should have told him something. And then he asked me out, and we went out. And that was our first date.
That night?
Yeah, and we were married following June.
What did you do for your date, though, that night?
Oh, there was nothing to do. We were in Rantoul, Illinois, which was just not, I think there were three taverns and one restaurant. What could you do? You go to the local saloon, you know, and that was it. And then walked home, and it was cold. I can remember that, but I didn't think much of him at the time. But he grew on me. He was a very persistent man. And I'm very happy. We had had a good life, and we have two wonderful children and now two beautiful grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And they're everything we ever hoped for.
And so you met, and then you were married the following June. But then over that time, right, you lived in various places over the course of your marriage, I mean.
Oh, yeah. We lived in Chicago, and we had both children there. And then we went back to Davenport, Iowa, which is really what I consider my home. And then we lived there until 1997 when we moved to Florida. And I really hated leaving, but my husband has this lung problem. You know Grandpa does. He coughs all the time. And he's so good down here. Plus, we have the VA hospital here. That's a marvelous facility, and we're grateful to them. In fact, my new glasses, I had my cataract surgery done there. So anyway, and it's nice to be close to you. Mm-hmm. And to Mark in Orlando or Maitland or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So we're going there for Christmas.
Right.
What?
And so how did you choose Davenport?
Well, let's see. My grandparents lived there. And that's why we went back, my mother and I went to school. I went to my last 2 years. I went to a Catholic girls' school, which I loved because we wore uniforms. There was no deciding what to wear every day. And then from there, and then I went in the service.
How did you choose to go into the service?
Well, I had a scholarship for college, but we were not rich people, and there was no way I could go, even though I had a nice little scholarship. But so I decided, well, I was adventurous. I wanted to see the world. So I went to the Navy recruiter, and he was an old salt. And I wasn't thrilled with him, and he wasn't thrilled with me. He did not like the idea of women in the service. So I went next door to the Army and enlisted, and then we took tests, and you got, depending on your score, you got in the Air Force, and I was delighted to get in the Air Force. However, why did I pick photography? I often wonder. I guess because it was the hardest thing to get into, I decided I'd try it. And I was in Denver for 9 or 10 months, and I loved Denver, and I loved the school. I mean, I really enjoyed my service, and then from there I went to Rantoul. And then I met Sid, and it was over. So what about you? This is not all about me.
You're the storyteller here
today. Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
And how about your childhood? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, it was not a happy childhood. My parents were divorced when I was 8, and my mother and I were very close. We were close all our lives. We lived together all except 12 and a half years of our lives. Hmm. And well, you know your great-grandmother. You loved her dearly. But I changed schools 17 times and attended 9 different schools. So it was really hectic until my last 2 years. And I loved my last 2 years of high school. And I've been back for a couple of reunions, but now there's not too many left. I mean, I'm outgrowing all my friends, you know. I mean, I'm getting old, and they're dropping like flies anymore. Mm. Well, when you get to be 80.
Right,
what can
true.
You expect? Although I don't think I act like I'm 80.
I don't think so either. Yeah. So what kind of a kid were you?
Very docile, very good. I mean, my mother had no problems with me until I decided I wasn't going back to high school. That was a problem. That's why she put me in this other school. But no, I mean, I love school. I really love school. But I didn't like moving back and forth. I couldn't make any good friends, you know. Mm-hmm. You just don't. So, and I never liked Gary, where we lived off and on, and anyway, my childhood was not the best, but I had a mother who was there for me all the time. I always knew I could count on her. Mm-hmm. And I still miss her, even though she's been gone since 96. Mm-hmm. I do talk about her a lot, don't I, Jean?
You do. What are some of your favorite memories with her?
Oh, let's see. It's hard to say. So many happy things happened with us. I was so thrilled when she married my stepfather. I really pushed for that. And I named our daughter Paula for him. His name was Paul. And Well, there's just so many. I mean, it would take 50 minutes to tell you all the beautiful things about her, but she was always there for me. She didn't think I could do anything wrong, which is very nice, you know. And she stuck with me. She could have put me in a home when she was divorced from my father, but she wouldn't do that. She kept me with her, and she was a little, little girl. So anyway, it was her name was Doris Everett Kiernan, and she was born in Galesburg, Illinois in 1908, so she would have been 100 this year.
Oh, that's true. So
it's hard to believe.
Yeah. On June 29th.
Yes, right, June 29th. And your father's birthday is the 27th. He was almost a present for her.
Oh, that's true, because he was quite early, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was an eighth-month baby. We nearly lost him. We had him in the hospital in Chicago for 3 months. Mm. He was allergic to cow's milk. So, but we saved him, and now I wish that one doctor who told me I wouldn't raise him, I wish he were around. He's probably dead, too, because I was furious with him, and I have to look at him now. He has his doctorate, and he's a very successful man. Mm-hmm. So he told me he was a puny little child, and he probably wouldn't live very long. Oh, when I think about it, I could strangle him. Okay, where are we now?
Right. Here. And so then with great-grandma, right?
Yes.
Right. Now that you're a grandmother, mm-hmm. what kind of grandmother was she? Like, can you see?
Oh, she was a wonderful grandmother. She was a little partial to Paula because she had her for about 5 months. Because when we were in Chicago, Sid's VA bill ran out, his GI Bill. So I had to go to work. Well, what are you going to do? You know, there was no, they didn't have days, places to take your kids in those days. So my mother took her back to Davenport. We're in Chicago. I was a wreck. I would never have do that again. Oh, it was horrible. And so my mother was naturally, she raised, you know, those 5 months. And Paula was very ill when she got back, when I took her back, because she missed my mother. But we got over that. And, of course, I got pregnant for Mark right away. There were 14 and a half months between those two. And I was working at an insurance company, and they wouldn't, in those days, if you got pregnant, you were out the door. You know, which is ridiculous, but that's the way it was. Or at the phone company, you couldn't be married before the war. But after that, when the war started, well, they had no choice. So I worked at the phone company during the war. In fact, I was on the board VJ night, and I got it. We all got a plaque for doing that. That was something. The switchboard lit up like Christmas. I've never seen anything like it. Because was VJ, the silly, horrible, ghastly war was over. It was wonderful. Oh, that was a high moment in my life.
Where did you first get your sense of patriotism?
I don't know. I think I've always had it. Mm-hmm. I love, I'm still, I have to cough, okay? Excuse me. I just loved the flag, and I don't know, I just something about it, and when I went in the service, that really cemented it. Mm. And now I am registered at the Women's Memorial in Washington, and which is really nice. I try to support that. And I belong to the WAF Association, which is the Women in the Air Force. And I keep in touch with some of my friends from the service. Mm-hmm. But as I say, you know, they're all in such poor health. And I'm not, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. I had a real good physical, and they told me I was like a 65-year-old woman. Thank you very much.
You've told me a little bit about Arlene, one of your good friends from the service,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. She was my maid of honor in the service. And she married a young man, and he went to Korea a week after she was married. So she stayed in then until he came home. But she was a lovely girl. She still is a lovely girl. She lives in Yuma, Arizona now, and we keep in touch. Mm-hmm. It's nice with the telephone, you know. I don't do email. I am really not up to all this good stuff that you people do.
Right. But it seems like you've always been one to have lots of friends and keep in touch with a lot of people, right? You had a great social network when you were in Davenport.
Oh,
I
yes. Well, I belonged to One Bridge Club for 43 years, and now there's only three left in that original club. So, and I talked to all of them. I've been doing, instead of Christmas cards, I do phone calls. Hmm. But one of the highlights of my life is when I worked at the college, when Paula went to school to Iowa. And I went to work at Marycrest. I love, those were my 50s, 40s and 50s. I love the work, and I love the nuns, and we had a wonderful rapport. I still keep in touch with all of them. Mm-hmm. And it was an experience I'll never forget.
And so you worked as a registrar, right, at Mary Crest?
Yeah, I started out as a record clerk, and in 2 years I was registrar. Because I did not have a college education, but when they checked with the North Central certifying people, they said, listen, if she can do the job, don't worry about it. So I got that job, and that was nice because I had two in college, mm-hmm. and Sid and I really had to scramble to keep, you know, even though Iowa was not the most expensive school, it's an excellent school, and I loved Iowa City. I really liked to go up there, and Paula got her MBA there, and Mark got his PhD there, so we have nice memories of Iowa City.
So what would you do when you would go visit them? What would you do in Iowa City when you would go visit them?
We usually take them out to dinner because they were always hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Mark was such a crazy one. He didn't with a computer. You know, Johnson is such a common name, so he changed his name to Yukon when he ran his cards. In those days, you had the IBM cards. But he would do this at night. So he'd be up all night and sleep all day and then go to class in between. And he would be such a slob. We really worried about him because he just didn't care. He wore tennis shorts and a thing over his head and let his hair grow. And his sister would walk down the street, and if she saw him coming, she'd cross the street so she didn't have to speak to him. She was so embarrassed by him. But now that I think about it, I think it's hilarious. He didn't care. Oh, of course, now he cares, but he didn't then. He was all to get through school. That's what he wanted. Well, he started in 70, got his doctorate in 76. You can't really mm-hmm. say that he wasn't hustling right along.
Mm-hmm. And I heard him once say that he was trying to beat Aunt Paula, like get finished before she did, really.
Oh, yeah, they're very competitive. He was within 2 hours of getting his degree, but she beat him. And he was really furious. He wanted to beat her. But it worked out. Anyway, he got his doctorate, and that was what he was after.
Mm.
And we started talking college when those children were just little. And Mark said he was going to go to Iowa City and throw the bull. Well, I don't think he did that, but I thought it was hilarious when he'd say that. It was so cute.
What were they like as kids?
Oh, they were something. I was with them almost always alone because Sid traveled, and I would be home with the children. And they were very good, and we ate what we wanted to eat when he was gone. And I would read to them at the table. And it's funny because I did all these things, and now when I say something, oh, I remember how Daddy used to play games with us. They don't remember me sitting there by the hour reading and taking them everywhere, but they remember Daddy because that was the high spot of the week mm-hmm. when he would come home. And he always walked in and they'd say, what did you bring me? And he usually had some little trinket for them, but he traveled so much, and that was hard on him, really mm-hmm. hard. But in those days, you know, we didn't have big vacations and things like that. When he took a vacation, he'd get another job for 2 weeks mm-hmm. because money was tight. We bought our first house. I was worried to death that we wouldn't be able to make the payments, but we did. We struggled. Nobody handed us anything. We worked for everything, and I think that's good. And we didn't have any credit. We had no credit cards. We had nothing like that, and that was all right. Mm-hmm. I had a checking account, but that... It was different. It was different than today. And not that it was better. I think change is important. You can't be stagnant. I think that's... And as far as sitting here looking back at things and saying the good old days, baloney, I like my wife now. I have a dishwasher and a washer and a dryer, and I have a few things that I didn't have then. So, and I love the idea of young people. That's what I like. I'm living in a park with all these people over 55, and they're very nice, very nice. But some of them are boring. They are really boring. I can't help but say it. But it's still a good life. We're very grateful.
Wonderful, wonderful. So it's nearly Christmas, and I remembered you telling me about how the gifts and the code that you had.
Oh, when my kids, Mark was the worst one. He'd shake things. And just, you know, if something could be breakable, and I used to just get furious, so I devised a code. And I've never let them know what it is. And Mark said to me not too long ago, when you were, you know, not pretty young, Mom, are you going to tell me about the code? I said, no, I'm taking it to my grave.
But the code for the gifts?
Uh-huh.
That you would, what would you do, though, with the code?
What would I do with it?
Right. So you would write something on the tag,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, uh-huh. And it was all numbers and letters, and they never cracked it, never. And that's because I'm devious. I changed things. But, you know, that was crazy because they were just, you know, count how many. Do you have this many gifts or I have this many gifts? You know, that was important. Everything was even, Stephen. So I put all these numbers on and nobody knew what anything. I had to give out the gifts. And I did. And I'm keeping that secret.
And so you still know the code now, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm not telling it. That's a secret.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Got it. Do you have any other secrets?
Well, if I do, you think I'm going to tell you? No, I have. Everybody has secrets, Jamie. Mm. And a couple always has lovely secrets, you know, that nobody else is ever going to know. And I just dread the day when something happens to one of us. But I'm not thinking about that. I think positive. We're going to go on and on. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want.
Right.
As long as Grandpa can play golf twice a week and play poker once a week and win.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do my thing. I love to read and talk to people and write letters.
Mm-hmm. And play cards,
and
right?
Well, I don't get to play cards, you know, only when you're there and when we're at Mark's. But I would really like a bridge game this Christmas. I wish it could be arranged.
How did you learn bridge in the first place?
I belong to a 500 club, and unbeknownst to me, some of the women were bored with 500, and so they started learning bridge. And all of a sudden, we went to club one night, and they said, we're playing bridge. I had no idea what to do. So I got a book and read it, and then I started playing. And then I taught Paul and Mark to play bridge because we were out in the country. And on the weekends, you know, people wouldn't come out if the weather was bad. So they learned how to play bridge. And that was really nice. Then we could play. But, of course, Mark didn't believe me. He went to the library and got books. So he read the books, and he had his own strategy. But that's how he was.
Yeah.
But you are a good bridge player, Jamie.
Mm-hmm. But we always play pinochle.
Well, yeah, but that cutthroat, that's a good game. That's mm-hmm. a good game.
How did you learn that one?
I don't know. I think I was born knowing it. We played cards as a child. Everybody played cards. We didn't have television, you know, so we entertained ourselves.
You would play with great-grandma, too?
Hmm?
Would you play with your mom?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, she always had to work to raise me. I mean, she didn't have much time. But I was thinking about something when we were driving down here. My grandfather was born in a dugout in Kansas. And there were seven children. And two of them died on the trip out. They were going to Oklahoma. Anyway, they buried these two babies, and then they drove the wagons over the top of the graves so that animals wouldn't desecrate the graves. And when my grandfather died, I went to the cemetery, first time I've been to the old cemetery, and there were no markers. There was nothing on any of the graves, and I was upset because I thought, you know, we should have their names of my grandmother and now my grandfather and uncles and aunts. And then I was told the story that because of what happened on the prairie, that there was no way anyone was ever going to have a marker because those two little babies were buried with nothing and no one would ever know where they were. So there is nothing on the grave that tells that it's our family. And I guess that's okay if that's what they wanted. But I thought that was a kind of a sad story.
Mm.
That must have been a hard life then. But they must have been brave people to do that. They turned around in Oklahoma and went back to Illinois. It was just too hard. But he only had a fourth grade education, my grandfather.
Mm.
But he was quite the man. Quite the man. They had six children, and he was a good father.
So this is on great grandma's side, on your mother's side.
Yeah, right.
So they had six children.
They had six children. Yeah, three girls, three boys.
And where was great grandma in that?
She was number. She was, let's see, one, two. She was, I think, the third child.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a tomboy, and my grandmother used to say when she'd look for Doris, she'd look out the window and look in the tallest tree because that's probably where she'd be. She was really something else. And she was always and loved to dance. She was quite the dancer. In fact, that's where she met my father, at a dance. I think he swept her off her feet. And she still would do the Charleston just for fun when she was in her 40s, just for fun.
Just in the house? Sorry.
Yeah, just to show the... Well, we love to dance. I love to dance till I marry my husband. And the only time he can dance is if he's had a couple of drinks, and then he's not that good.
What kind of dancing would you like to do?
Everything. Everything. I love to polka. I love to shoddy. Do the Lindy. I love to waltz, foxtrot, anything. Just turn the music on and turn me loose. But now I can hardly walk across the street, so I'd have a little problem, wouldn't I? Oh, dear. Well.
Yeah, I didn't know that you were a dancer.
Hmm?
I didn't know that you liked to dance.
Oh, I love to dance. Yeah. Do you like to dance?
A little bit. I feel like if I learned, that would help.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I just remember doing it. Well, my mother gave me tap lessons, dancing lessons, and I like to tap. But as far as ballroom or anything like that, no. I just the guy took a hold of you, and out you went on the floor, and he'd lead, and you'd follow, and that was fun. This dancing some people do now, and I'm surprised they don't put their backs out of whack. It is incredible to me, all that energy. I think it's marvelous.
And so do you see yourself becoming more like your mother?
Oh, I am like my mother.
How so?
Oh, I talk like her. I'm starting to look a little more like her, although I look more like my grandmother. I have dark circles around my eyes. My mother was just a wonderful person. She had such a tough life, and those last 29 years we had her with us, you know. She was just a darling. There's just no other. Oh, she had a temper. And she let you know, too. She didn't stand for any foolishness, and that was good. But I always knew, no matter what happened, she loved me dearly, and I could do no wrong. Unless she wanted to correct me, that was different. But somebody else, forget it. She was there for me. And that's something everyone should have. I think that's what's wrong today. These kids don't have someone that just thinks that they're wonderful and stands by them. Now, she would correct me. She always just say, you are as good as anyone, but no one is better than you are. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to remember. And if somebody was rude to me, she'd say, just ignore them. Well, it's kind of hard to do when you're a kid. But it worked out. It worked out. We went through it all, and it was... I've had a good life. I don't figure it's over either.
Right? Yeah, that's true. And so you spent a fair amount of time in Wisconsin, too.
Oh, that's where we went on vacation. Some people went to the Grand Canyon. We went to the Northwoods to see Sid's family, and they were wonderful. Sid's father was a real tall, Swedish man, and Sid told me the first time I met him, he said, now, if my dad doesn't talk to you, don't be surprised. We got off the train, he never stopped talking. It was really funny, and they were very welcoming. They had never met me before we got married, and... they were very nice to me, and Sid went deer hunting and left me with all the new relatives, which was really charming of him. And I got to go to meet all the relatives in Hayward, Wisconsin, which is where the family was original. They came from Sweden and settled there. And his Auntie Lillian, who was 6'2", and giggled. She had a real funny little giggle and was very nice to me. Well, they all were. And I felt so funny. I mean, here I was pregnant, meeting these people for the first time. It was an experience. And Sid had a wonderful time deer hunting, and I got to meet all the relatives. And they were wonderful. And my mother-in-law was just the kindest, sweetest person. And we got along. She was not a mother-in-law who interfered. She wouldn't give you advice unless you asked for it. But we went there every year after the children were about 3. And we took them up, and they were baptized there at the house. We had the pastor come over, a Lutheran pastor. And I raised my children Lutheran. And I think now, I don't know what they do, but then I don't question. It's none of my affair. And what religion are you, my darling?
So from my mom's side, too, Buddhist, right?
Right.
So, and you met, and you spent a lot of time with my other set of grandparents.
Oh, your grandparents, the Haridas?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they were darling people. Daisy and Howard. They were just so charming and made me feel so welcome. We were out at Mark's and Michelle and Merle's at I promised you to come. I'd come for your fourth birthday. So then I did, and I got to meet them, and they were just, well, it was a wonderful visit, and I've always cherished that. And then we corresponded after that. And then, of course, your grandmother had breast cancer and died of that. And then I've met two of your aunts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have a great family on the other side of the family. The Ritas are really lovely people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're blessed, Jamie, with the good relatives. Mm-hmm. You really are.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, some families aren't lucky like we are.
Mm. And so I've always wanted to ask you this, too. How did you find out you would become a grandmother?
Well, your father called up and told me.
Oh, and that's how he did it. That's how it was done.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember the first time I saw you. Your dad was on a sabbatical. You were born in Tucson, and he was going to the University of Minnesota for the last 6 months of his sabbatical. And your mother flew with you to Moline, Illinois, because we were in Davenport. And when she got off the plane, she hadn't had anything to eat, and she was afraid to take a pill for Dramamine because she always got air sick, because she was afraid with you holding on to a 5-month-old kid. She got off the plane. She was as white as a sheet. She just tossed that kid at me. And you put your arms around my neck, and I think it's been that way ever since. You were always my darling little girl. You weren't one bit shy. And we gave Merle a quick candy bar and got her on her feet and took her home. She was really wiped out. That was a tough trip for her.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't well. She she contacted hepatitis C when you were born from a transfusion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank God that's over. Mm-hmm. Now they check for that. They didn't in those days.
And how about for Brent, the first time you saw him?
Well, when he was Caesarean, so they told me when, and then I came out.
You took the train.
I took the train out, and I was there. And your mother was all baby.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you weighed 12, 3.5, and he weighed 11, 7, so you weren't exactly little tiny babies. But I went up to the hospital the day after he was born, and your mother was really kind of sad. She said, "Oh, he looks so Oriental." I said, "For heaven's sakes, Merle, he's half Oriental. He's half Japanese. What?" But he was so darling. He was such a cute baby. And he was a good baby, a real good little baby. I was there 2 weeks after he was born.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went home, and they were fine. You were fine. Mm-hmm. But you were my tag-along. I couldn't get rid of you. You were glued to me.
And I cried and cried when you would leave.
Yes, you cried all the way home. Your father said he could have just... He didn't know what to do with you. He kept saying, "I want my grandma."
And then great-grandma's reaction to Brent and Brent's relationship with her.
So thrilled. She was so thrilled. Well, he looked like a little sumi wrestler the first time we saw him. He was 3 months old, you know. He weighed 25 pounds. When he was 3 months old, he was really a tub. And she held him, but she couldn't walk with him. And she just hung on to him until we could take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But she couldn't stop looking at him because he had these gorgeous brown eyes. And he said when he was older, "Why does great-grandma stare at me?" And I said, "Because you're so beautiful and your eyes really, she just admires your eyes." He wasn't too thrilled with that, but she couldn't take her eyes off him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when we played, remember, we played cards with breakfast. I had you for those 6 weeks they moved to Atlanta. Oh, what a time we had. One of the hottest summers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we had breakfast, we played cards, fish and war. And I taught you how to say congratulations, even though you were little cheaters. And when the big old crocodile tears would roll down the cheeks and then you'd still say congratulations. They taught you to be good winners.
Mm-hmm. And do you say the same thing to Dad and Aunt Paula, too?
Oh, absolutely. Well, of course, they were so... They didn't play cards like that. They didn't really play like you and Brent did. It was different. It was different. We played... we colored and cut out things. And it was your childhood was so different than theirs. But that's the way, you know, things were.
Right. And so you spent a fair number of summers at Boot Lake.
Yes. 32 years we went up there for vacations. And last year was the first year we stayed in Florida all summer. It was lovely. I didn't mind it at all, but I did miss the lake and my friends up there. We had such a nice time. But and Sid loved the fishing and his boat, which we're waiting to get rid of. And but it's too difficult. It's 1,800-mile drive, and we just can't do it anymore. And even though we'd love to, it's just too difficult. And now it's too expensive.
Right. And the resort there, though, you would stay at the Birches, yes. And you would stay in the cottages, right?
Right. We used to go just for 2 weeks. And but then the last, 10 years, we went for 4 months. And that was and stayed in the motel at the Birches. And we had a wonderful time. And the kids, I watched those children grow up there, the people in there. And then Shirley Godfrey, who owned the resort, was a dear, dear friend of mine. And her sons were such darlings. And I mean, it was just a lovely time to go, but everything comes to an end, and you have to face that and not be sorry, just be glad you had what you had.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying that when you would get back from the lake, too, sometimes when great-grandma wouldn't go and she would stay and that she would cook all of the stuff.
We'd come home and she'd have fried chicken and potato salad and a cake, and she'd be so... The last few years, I had someone come and stay with her because I was afraid to leave her alone. And she liked that little diversion, you know, because she was really housebound the last 2 years. We did not go anywhere because I would not leave her. And but before that, I'd have someone stay with her. And that was fine. You know, she was happy. She was glad to see some different faces because I'm sure she was bored with Sid and I. But and we'd try to have people come in. And she loved when I had Bridge Club because all the girls would come and talk to her. And well, you know, her life, the last, I would say, 7 years of her life was not the greatest in the world, the quality of life. And so then when she had her hemorrhage, she had a lower GI hemorrhage, massive hemorrhage. The doctors talked about, well, they'd find out what was going on and do surgery. And I said, oh, no, you're not doing any surgery. I promised her no surgery. She's 88 years old. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that to her, so...
And now you talk to her, though. You still talk about her, talk to her, feel her around.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was with her. I was with my stepfather when he died, and I was with my mother, and so was Sid. I have no fear of death. It's a beautiful thing. It's part of living. And it was just so, and everyone looks about 10 years younger after they die. They just have the worry of the world is gone. I mean, the body is so peaceful. It's a beautiful thing. It's heartbreaking. Because who wants to lose someone you love? But at the same time, you wouldn't wish them back in the condition that they're in. And I have all that taken care of, let me tell you. I don't want anyone bringing me back if I'm in that kind of shape. And that's important to do, too. Even when you're young, Jamie. Mm-hmm. Well, in the medical profession, you should see all this.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Have you had patients die?
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. It's a... But it isn't, it's not a real, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I feel vindicated. Because I say that and people look at me and they think, oh, how can that be?
It's true.
It's very, very, well, I'm hoping to live long enough that you can be my doctor. Not my surgeon, but my doctor.
Yes.
And that won't be long.
No, not long at all. Not long at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I wanted to thank you for agreeing to do this with me. I've really enjoyed it. I think we have a special relationship and an extraordinary one. So I wanted to share this interview with you, this time with you.
Aren't you something? I really love you, and I think this was a great experience. And thank you for getting me into this with your Machiavellian traits.
I know, yes. And so I just wanted to end with what you always tell me anyway. How you say, nobody loves you like I do.
Nobody loves you like I do, Jamie.